the phrases, you know, authentic leadership, and that is sometimes the banners put on it to then excuse other behavior. Mm. And as you say, you know, if a woman blows up, oh, well, you're being very over emotional. Mm-hmm. Whereas if a man blows up, oh, isn't he strong? Isn't he, you know, he knows exactly what he wants and he's just telling you in his own way. And again, I am being hugely generalistic here. It's like, it's not every single male or female, whatever. But generally, if a woman responds, she's being emotional. Mm-hmm. If a man responds, he's being authoritative.
Welcome to Mind Over Grind, the podcast that explores mental health, well-being and business for people who sometimes struggle with all three. I'm your host, Alice Lyons, and through running my well-being company and coaching business, I've spoken with hundreds of professionals just like you who think they're doing business wrong. Being in business can suck, but it's a lot more bearable when we have unfiltered conversations around the process. So join me and my guests as we discuss how to work well, stay sane, and maybe even have fun while we're doing it. This episode is brought to you by Dark Coffee, getting you and your team firing on all cylinders with unfiltered mental health and well-being. Because when you feel great, you'll do great things. Hello, lovely. Welcome back to Mind Over Grind. I've got another interview episode for you today with a woman who I just bloody love. It's Michelle Harrodance, and I bloody love Michelle. And you will too by the end of this episode. She's been in my world for a couple of years now. I think the first time I met Michelle, she came to an event I was running and I just can't get rid of her. It's very annoying, but she's a wonderful leadership and development expert. She's an HR person. She just knows everything about everything and an incredible coach. She's actually been my coach for about a year now, over a year. I checked my stats earlier and I was like, how long have we been doing this whole coaching gig now? She's been coaching me for over a year and coaching generally for about 15 to 150 years. I lose track. But she's wonderful at everything she does work-wise, but that's not why I've invited her on the podcast today. I've invited Michelle on, and she's very kindly agreed and was extremely enthusiastic about doing so, to discuss something that she's experiencing in her personal life, which is affecting her work, and that is the experience of going through the perimenopause. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, I didn't learn anything about perimenopause at school or through college or university, and if someone with a uterus, this is very worrying to me. Even more worrying that I only really learned about it about a year ago, and I found out about it and I was like, what the fuck is this shit? It sounds horrid. And yeah, our conversation will center around the horridness of perimenopause for a large majority. It's going to be quite a graphic conversation in places because that is just very much Michelle's style, but it's a really important conversation because, as with all the episodes that I bring to you, we talk about workplace well-being, and we can't talk about workplace well-being without talking about health and the conditions that people come to the office with, you know, in a literal or a metaphorical sense. And perimenopause has so many far-reaching symptoms that can affect people. And it's not just cis women. We talk about trans men in this episode. We talk about non-binary people to a certain extent. Oh, do we? Oh, I'm not sure if we do. But also non-binary people are included in this conversation. And even if you yourself are not experiencing these symptoms, or if you will never experience any of these symptoms that fall into both physical and psychological, chances are you will be working with somebody who is going through these things. So it just makes sense for us all to be a bit more clued up on some of the things that could go on, and also how we can work with those things rather than against them. Michelle is from the same school of thought as I am around bringing more of yourself to work and how we can make that a more positive thing, because we both really believe that it is. There's a lot of reassurance in this episode, in this conversation. I really like how Michelle encourages people to kind of own their experiences and just kind of embrace the messiness of being human as well, which you all know is something I'm very keen on myself. She's an all-around wonderful human. I can't sing Michelle's praises enough, but I made some notes to give a bit more of a kind of thorough, comprehensive introduction to this episode. So we start off by kind of talking about patient advocacy and empowering individuals. So if you yourself are going through perimenopause, we were talking about how you can be more open with those conversations that you have with your health professionals and how you can advocate for yourself. So there's a lot of crossover with the conversation I had with Rachel Mole as well. We talk about the importance of being honest and being open if you're experiencing symptoms around your health, how important it is to speak openly with your team about that so that people can make adjustments as needed. It's really interesting for me because I know Michelle really well and she's very outspoken. She's an absolute force of nature kind of person, you know, really, as she says in her own words, she's not backwards and coming forwards and she's shit hot at what she does. She's been doing it for years. And yet she speaks very candidly about this and how she can be kind of thrown through a loop by some of the symptoms that she gets. Not so much the physical symptoms, which are far reaching and impactful as well, but she speaks more about the psychological side and how she feels more vulnerable talking openly about the fact that she gets anxiety or the fact that she has brain fog. She finds those things a lot harder to talk about and a lot more challenging to come forward with and speak openly about. So even someone who's very, very confident and very communicative in their workplace can be affected by these things. So we all have our challenges with our health conditions and, you know, the struggles that we have with ourselves. And I really appreciate Michelle speaking so candidly about this because it's not a case that, you know, any of us have an easy time with any of this. It's something that we all need to work on every day. And Michelle says she very much sees this as a work in process for her. So I'd like us all to take today's conversation as a really positive case study for how we can support people with perimenopause in the workplace, because Michelle is very open about saying that her employer is very, very good and she's had a really positive experience overall. So I don't want to put it in that box of like, oh, well, it's all right for her. She gets an easy gig of it. I would love to encourage people to really listen to what Michelle's workplace has done and what kind of tips and techniques we can take away and what kind of things we can implement for our own people in our companies to support them as they go on this inevitably hideous journey. And I say that knowing it's waiting around the corner for me at whatever age it chooses to strike. I don't think this will really be a problem for many of you because you're used to me and me being open and candid and stuff, but Michelle is very open and very candid. She speaks a lot about some of the physical challenges, but I haven't actually said what perimenopause is at this point. It's when you can start going through menopause symptoms, but you're still getting your cycle as well. So you have kind of all of the jazz and the wonder of menstruation with menopause. And it's like, it's very colourful. It's very traumatic by the sounds of it. But I think that's beneficial to hear an example of someone who's going through it and how that can kind of affect you. Because one, knowledge is power. Two, preparation is key if you're someone like me and who's probably going to go through it. But you know, just awareness is the first step for anything, right? We talk in the episode about awareness being an important first step, and that can help people get to a point of acceptance. So we accept that people are having challenges around us. We accept that we need to be there to support them as an individual. If you're going through it, it helps to have that level of acceptance within yourself of like, it's okay that I'm going through these things. It sucks, but here's what I can do about it. And then that helps us get to the point of action. We need all three of those things, and probably in that order as well. So the more we can raise awareness, the more we can educate each other, the less scary it is. Michelle is a really big advocate of surfacing the things that seem scary and throwing light on them, because when we shed light on things, it takes away some of their power. I said this in the episode about workplace well-being, the 10 fundamentals of workplace well-being. So have a listen to that if you haven't already, because there's a lot of crossover with this conversation that I had with Michelle. But I'll leave it there. I think you're really going to enjoy this. I love this episode, and listening back to it, it just put a load of, I don't want to say it enthused me around perimenopause, because I really don't want this to happen. But Michelle's a bad bitch, and she just kind of makes you feel like you can do anything. So I really hope, especially if you are going through perimenopause yourself, I really hope you find comfort and reassurance in this episode. And I'm sure Michelle won't mind me saying, you can reach out to her to have a discussion, because she's always up for making cool new friends. So all of her contact information will be down below. If you need, for your organisation, if you need any support or tips on like leadership, HR, things like that, I'm sure she wouldn't mind having a conversation with you as well. So please do get in touch. Enjoy the hell out of Michelle, and I will see you next time. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Mind Over Grind. And I'm joined today by Michelle Harrodance. Hello, Michelle.
Hey, Alice. How are you doing?
I'm doing so well. Thank you for joining me today. Would you like to introduce yourself to the lovely public and let them know who you are and what you do?
Yeah, of course. So this was an interesting one, actually, because my LinkedIn profile says senior leader, HR professional, coach, facilitator, mental health advocate. And I was reading it and I was thinking, it feels all quite impersonal, right? So Rising Tides, my coaching business, comes from the idea of supporting people through the ebb and flow of their own personal development. And as a coach, I help people step back to learn to navigate the ocean that is their life and ride those waves rather than being overwhelmed or intimidated by them. Now, my Insta profile says singer, traveler, dreamer, mental health advocate. And I'm also a bit of all of those things too. And I think it's really important, and where I landed was, I think it's really important to recognize your roles, if that makes sense. Ultimately, I'm passionate about people, innately curious, which good skills for a coach, I guess.
Absolutely. And I love that you've kind of introduced yourself by saying about all the roles that you play. So you're not just defining yourself by who you are in the workplace. You're actually saying I'm many things in many different contexts, and all of them are equally important.
Absolutely. And right now I work in a corporate, and you know, if you go onto my LinkedIn profile, you'll see that. And I've been there for a number of years, and that's part of who I am, but it's not all of who I am.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to dive into that topic a little bit more as we go on to discuss. One thing I did want to say that I absolutely love is with your company name, like the analogy you use is beautiful, but not only is it very clever in how it fits the kind of purpose of what your company does, but it actually refers to your previous career history. So like myself with Dark Coffee, that kind of harkens back to my early management career in hospitality, particularly coffee shops. Rising Tides is actually based on your career in the maritime industry.
Yep, absolutely. I was at sea. I spent 6 years at sea as an HR manager, and I now work in the corporate head office. So, Rising Tides definitely came out of my experiences at sea, and also just the ebb and flow of the ocean. And I was listening to a podcast the other day, and a fairly famous actor was kind of talking about mental health. And he said, you're the ocean, not the wave. And that really resonated with me with regards to kind of the ebb and flow that I used in terms of life. Life is the ocean, and how you then surf it, navigate it, drown in it, all of that kind of stuff. It's a really great metaphor.
I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but when I did my first public talk, like before I started Dark Coffee, the talk that kind of began the whole project, I delivered a talk which was called Dark Water, which was about suicidality and navigating suicidality. And I made the comparison between if you're feeling suicidal, you've got a choice between the difficult journey back to the boat or the difficult decision of drowning. And it's like, neither of those decisions is good. It's not like, ooh, suicide is an easy option. It's like, no, they're both hideous options to have to choose.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That really resonates. And also it's about being able to kind of surface, isn't it, and come above that crashing wave of despair or whatever it is that drives you to have those thoughts and be in that position. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a great metaphor for so many things.
If water is the answer to everything.
Absolutely. Water is life.
But we're not here to talk about water specifically today.
We're not, no.
We're actually here to talk about perimenopause. And this is particularly interesting because I think this is the first time on the podcast, first time in a long time anyway, that I've interviewed someone not on their kind of career specialist subject, but focusing in on someone with a lived experience, because I know you're like a leadership expert. You've been my coach for a long time. But perimenopause is something that we've spoken about just kind of in the periphery of everyday life. It's just come up in conversation two or three times, and just the conversations that we've had have been so interesting for me as someone who's not going through it just yet. And I just thought, you've got such a beautiful way of describing and talking about your experiences, so I thought it would be a wasted opportunity if I didn't get you on to hash it out in brutal detail. And I know you'll be very open about this.
It's really interesting, right? Because it's like, you know, you said, you know, about lived experience and how, you know, it sounds really interesting, and I'm like, yeah, wait till you go through it. You might not find it so interesting when you're in the midst of it.
This is just a delusion I've got in my head of like, yes, it's an interesting experience. That's what it is. It's not a trauma. It's fine.
Yeah.
So tell me about perimenopause and what it means to you. What is this process? And we'll dive into kind of your experiences with it.
Oh gosh, where to start? So I guess probably the easiest thing that most people relate to are the symptoms, in the sense, So for me, I'm really lucky. For me, I've got all the ones that are generally associated with menopause, and I'm still menstruating. So I get, you know, so I guess a bit of background. I started my periods when I was 9, and early enough, right? So you kind of think, okay, I'm kind of heading towards 49 now. So 40 years, enough already? No? Okay, we'll keep going. So yeah, so a lot of hormones in 40 years, right? But in the sense, so the main symptoms, I guess, for me are the hot flushes. And I love how they're called hot flushes, because they're really not, like, you think of a flush and it's over. Mm-hmm. So an example, I was on the train the other day coming back from London, and there was a couple of men sat opposite me and my friend. We were like sitting at a table and they were opposite us. And you know how you kind of just tune in and out to people's conversations? And one of these men said, oh, I think I'm having a hot flush. And I started laughing. And they kind of both looked at me, because obviously I'm not quiet when I laugh. And so they both kind of went, okay, weird woman laughing at us. And I went, look, if you were having a hot flush, you would know. And my friend was like, I can't believe you're doing this. And so my friend was like, and I was like, no, I'm sorry. It's, you know, I'm not inside this man's body, but it's perfectly obvious he's not having a hot flush. And he kind of just looked at me, and give him his credit, he was like, so how would I know then? And I was like, so tell me, does it feel like there's a volcano inside you that's about to erupt? And he was like, no. And I said, probably not a hot flush then. And he laughed. I
mean, it's your experience.
He did take it well, and he did laugh. But my friend was like, seriously, Michelle, I can't take you anywhere. And I was like, but it's about education, because these are words that people just like throw around and go, oh, I'm having a hot flush. Oh, I'm having night sweats. Oh, you know, whatever. And it's like, okay, so hot flush for me is literally like having a volcano inside my body. It starts in my stomach. It comes up through my chest. I feel my face like it's on fire. Mm-hmm. And then I literally sometimes feel like I'm going to pass out because I'm just so hot. Mm. And generally it happens when I'm sat in a meeting. Mm. It happens when I'm standing in the queue at Tesco's or wherever, you know, and you never know when they're coming. You can't kind of go, right, okay, it's Tuesday, it's 20 to 6, and I'm about to have a hot flash. It just happens,
which is so weird, isn't it? Because we're getting more savvy to the fact that we can track our periods and kind of anticipate things, and not everybody is able to track their cycle in that way, but as a general rule, a lot of people are kind of able to predict.
Yeah, so I generally know when it's going to happen in my cycle. But sometimes, bless Mother Nature, she just throws in a curveball and goes, you know what? You know, it's normally on this day of your cycle. Well, I'm going to throw some in here. Mm-hmm. And you kind of go, thanks for that.
I did not need your bullshit today.
Exactly, right? And my friend was like, she was like, Sue, and I was like, we need to be more open about this. Yeah. Night sweats, okay? I wake up drenched. Literally, and I'm not exaggerating, I have to change my clothes sometimes, I have to have a shower in the middle of the night, and you're just like, so the periods weren't enough, you know, you kind of want to give me more. Well, thanks. Yeah. Brain fog. Mm-hmm. There are certain points in my cycle I will literally stop in the middle of a sentence because I cannot remember what I was talking about. And again, generally in an important meeting, or you're like having a conversation and you kind of go, I'm really sorry, what was I talking about?
No.
And even though people kind of, like, the generic thing is, oh yeah, okay, brain fog, poor you, whatever, to actually experience it and not have any recollection of what you were talking about, it literally just disappears into thin air, and you're left there going, am I an idiot? Have I lost the ability to think, to speak? And that's basically, for me, that's what it feels like.
And it must be quite unnerving as an experience to have that kind of disconnection and that feeling of like a loss of control over your mind and your body. It's quite a scary kind of process to go through.
Which then links to the anxiety. Mm. So the anxiety around, when's it going to happen? Am I going to make myself look like a complete idiot? I mean, that's generally an anxiety thing of mine anyway, but it's kind of heightened by, at certain points in my cycle, I will be paranoid. I will be second guessing myself. I will be overthinking to the literal point of paralysis, procrastination, paralysis. Like I'll be like, I honestly can't even make it. Like, would you like a glass of water? Just the ability to function as a coherent human being just disappears for me. And I know it's different. It is. And I think the really important thing is to say it's different for everybody. I have friends who are my age, perimenopausal. They're wonderful GPs, have put them on HRT, and they're like coasting through it. Mm-hmm. And I'm struggling at the moment with my GP to kind of, because they want to, but they want me to do one thing and I don't want to do that. And I'm like, there must be other options. Mm-hmm. So the one thing they want me to do is get a coil fitted. And because that regulates your hormone. And I'm just, I don't want that inside me. You know, mm-hmm. I came off the pill years ago. I don't want, it feels very invasive for me. And some of my friends were, oh, just, and I'm like, no, I'm not just going to say, oh, well, okay, then if that's the only option, because I know it's not, from having done my homework and talking to people who are professionals in this arena, the coil is not the only answer. But it's about having those conversations with your healthcare professional to kind of get them to a point of helping you, not just kind of going, I've only got 5 minutes, so here's a coil. You know,
yeah, and this touches on a point that I kind of talked about in the last interview I did with Rachel Moll. She talks a lot about disability and accessibility, and she's a huge advocate of patient advocacy, basically, and empowering individuals to be able to advocate for themselves, but also trying to get, you know, workplaces and doctors and people to be more receptive to everybody's needs. And yeah, it's such a huge problem. It's something I'm increasingly talking about on LinkedIn, is like my cycle and how it affects my work, how it affects me in that context. And it's a huge problem that's come up as I've been having those conversations, is how damaging the healthcare system is for women a lot of the time, because we go through all these processes where we're not believed, our symptoms are minimized, we're kind of told like, oh, it's just a natural part of a woman, go away and get on with it. And it pisses me off, because it's like, it's so disruptive. And when I was with my ex, he'd sometimes see me on my period and I'd have days where, you know, 2 days at the beginning of my cycle, I can barely walk a lot of the time. And he would just look at me in disbelief. Like, I'm still working because I run my own business. I have to, well, you know, I can choose not to. Fortunately, I can be flexible around my needs. But he was saying like, how can it be possible that you're losing like 20 days a year and doctors are letting you? It's just like, could you imagine if he would always say, oh, if men went through periods, we'd have solved it by now. And it's like,
well, that's like, it's like they say, well, if men got pregnant, we wouldn't have a birth control issue.
Yeah.
You know, because like, we just wouldn't. I mean, that we're being very generalistic there, but yeah, in the sense of, so let's talk about periods. So, you know, perimenopause, right? As I say, I'm really lucky. I get the menopause symptoms and I still get my periods. My periods are ridiculously heavy. Mm. Although one of the things they say about perimenopause is your cycle becomes irregular. Now, I haven't got to that point yet. My cycle is still fairly regular, although it's getting longer. Mm-hmm. So it's like, through my early years or whatever, it was about 28 days, bang, done, 28 days, bang. And then I was on the pill for years, so you knew exactly when it was coming. Mm-hmm. When I came off the pill, again, went straight back into 28 days. I have no idea how my body recognizes that, but it does. It's an amazing thing, right? But then my cycle can now be 30 days, 33 days, 35 days. Mm. I think the longest at the moment has probably been 36 or 37.
Well, it's such an annoying variation, isn't it? Because it's just enough that you can't predict it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when it comes, the first, and it was interestingly, I'm just finishing, so the first 3 days this month were horrendous. Mm. like and not to kind of get too graphic, but in the sense of forget tampons, forget pads. I choose to use like the period pads, so I'm trying to, in my impact on the environment, etc. And they say, you know, for heavy days, I went through 3 pairs in 1 day. Mm-hmm. Because I came through my clothes, mm-hmm. and I was at work.
Mm, it's the worst, isn't it?
And you sat there in a meeting and you think, yeah, I can't get up.
Mm, no.
How am I going to extricate myself from this room without... And people ask me why I wear dark clothes all the time, right? You know, I'm hardly going to walk into work with a pair of white trousers or a white dress, and because just no.
Oh God, don't you love those period adverts from like the 90s where a woman's like running through fields in white?
I know. As like, if
no.
You
know, no one would do that.
As if I feel like wearing shorts that like go up my, you know, it's like, no, I'm sorry, no. Lucky you if that's how you experience your periods, my lovely, but no, welcome to reality.
And when they used to use like the blue liquid, I would get so triggered, like, why is it blue? But it's because it's and like sanitary.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it's just that much. No, it's like freaking Niagara. So, you know, forget your little test tube, forget how like, no. Yeah.
And it always looks so like clean and like measured and like, ooh, it falls perfectly in the middle of the pad and never overspills. It's like, that is not real.
It's like, welcome to the world of commerciality.
They needed a little like subheading there, like results may vary. Like,
yeah, that's exactly it, isn't it? This may not be indicative of how you will experience this, you think?
I actually love, there's so many like challenger brands coming out now who are very graphic in the kind of content they're putting out. So you have like company directors who are showing how you put in a tampon, not as graphically as you'd think, but they show the string hanging out of a bikini and like they'll talk about some of the symptoms and stuff. And I think it's only got to be a good thing, because I genuinely do not think people realize, and I'm not just talking about men or people who don't experience periods, but I don't think a lot of people who even experience it know how other people experience it and how vastly different our experiences can be and how it can affect us day to day. So I wanted to dive into the work aspect of it a little bit more. So obviously you're going through perimenopause, you can't just take a sick day, life goes on and we're expected to kind of deal with it. So how has that affected you day to day in work? Because you're, you know, a senior leader, you're hot shit, you got stuff to do.
So again, for me, the impact is varying, right? And I think lots of companies are kind of stepping into this space now. We have you know, there's menopause guides, there's perimenopause guides, there's talks and things like that. And that's all great. And they are spaces where you can kind of feel more comfortable. But the impact on a day-to-day basis, like the brain fog, I mean, it's a case of I have to write everything down. I've got like notebooks full of things, because if I don't write it down, I will forget it. And it's that kind of feeling, which then feeds, for me, it feeds the anxiety of I'm not doing a good job, I'm going to fail. And that then the old, good old imposter comes out, and, you know, that inner critic, and that kind of then starts running something completely different that's, you wouldn't necessarily connect with a physical response, you know. So periods are a physical thing, right? And perimenopause is a physical thing, hot flushes, night, all of that kind of thing. But you wouldn't then necessarily kind of go, oh, so that's what's leading to your anxiety, that's what's kicked off your imposter syndrome. And it actually took a long time for me to kind of make the connection, because I live with anxiety and depression anyway. And so then to kind of go, oh well, maybe it's not about that today, maybe it's about that. Well, that's not helpful, you know. So you're kind of dealing with stuff over here and going, right, I'm getting my shit together here, and then kind of go, this thing comes flying in and goes, no, okay, I'm going to give you something else to, like, you know, think about. So impact wise as I say, you've known me for a while now, I'm not backwards in coming forward. So I will kind of share with people, obviously not like graphic details, but I will share with people and say, look, I'm having a bit of brain fog today, or I'm not really feeling crash hot, bear with me, I'm having a hot flush, you know, that kind of, and I will use that kind of language, because again, you know, we've talked about mental health before, the more you normalize the language, the more you normalize the language, and the more it's then normal for people to hear a woman in her late 40s to say, I'm having a hot flush, I'm really not feeling fantastic today, can you please bear with me, I've got serious brain fog. And the impact, though, when we talk about imposter and anxiety, is you see people kind of nodding and going, yeah, completely sympathize, it must be awful, and the imposter's going, yeah, they're not really thinking that, they're thinking she's just making excuses, or oh, okay, here she goes again, or, you know, what is it this time? So the impact, I think, is wider than the actual physical symptoms of the perimenopause as well.
And thank you for talking so openly about the kind of mental side of it as well, because I think societally, we're coming around to the idea of menopause and what that means, but I don't think a lot of people even know about perimenopause necessarily, so they wouldn't make that connection. I know one of my clients was talking about some symptoms that were going round and round for her, and similar to yourself, she'd always had anxiety, but she was getting these periods of like feeling really anxious, and she couldn't really put a finger on why. And I kind of looked at her age and I listened to what she was talking about, and obviously we've been having conversations and other people in my network have been having conversations, and I was like, is there a chance this is perimenopause? And then I kind of sent her off on a little research mission to see if it could be, and we think maybe it is. But I think that's why these conversations are increasingly important, because a lot of people, like you said, they might not think of it as a stage of their development and their body and their mind naturally developing. They might, their immediate go-to is judgment, and I'm doing something wrong, I'm broken, what have I done, and like, why am I feeling like this, and rationalizing, you know, unfortunately a very natural process.
Yeah, I mean, I think the great thing is that companies are talking about it more, and it's absolutely spoken about more than it used to be. And I think, you know, you saying about, oh, people don't already talk about perimenopause, whereas I know a lot of people that do, because, and that might be my age group, and because we're all sitting there sweating together and going, well, isn't that great? But I do think from an organization perspective, I think that companies are talking about it a lot more, and I think they're trying to find solutions or support, you know. However, I think it still sits very firmly within the female box. And it, in my opinion, it's something that women go through, you know. It's not seen as, you know, it's going back to our comment before, like kind of making a joke of it, you know, if men had menopause, you know, we'd be shouting about it from the rooftops, or if, you know, men got pregnant, we wouldn't need birth control, you know, all of those kind of sexist comments, really, because they are sexist then against the male population. However, I think from a, you know, a perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, endopause, all of that, I mean, and I am no expert in this, all I know is my own experience of it, and talking to, again, you know, women of my age. But I do think it's still very much seen as something that women go through. And, you know, in a previous relationship, my ex-partner would just kind of go, oh, it's that time of the month, right, I'm not going to talk to you for like 3 or 4 days. And you're like, how is that actually helping me? You know, in the sense of, you're actually making me feel even more excluded and even more like I'm, I don't know, broken or whatever, because we won't, you know. And if you react in the wrong way or whatever, it's like, oh, it must be that time of the month. You know, not you're being a dick, it's just that time of the month. So I think it is very much seen still as a woman thing. But I do think that men get impacted by it, which I think is important to call out, because if you are in a relationship and you're impacted by something, they're going to be impacted by it as well. And yeah, I, again, to flip it over, I do know a fair amount of men who actively support their partners and who actively are seeking to educate themselves more, which is great. And I think the more that, again, the more that we can normalize the conversation, the more that men will feel, and I'm making an assumption here, right, but the more that men will feel able to be involved.
And we do need to kind of broaden the discussion anyway, because in terms of inclusivity, you have, I saw an incredible post the other week, which was by a trans man who had a uterus. So he was talking about the impact it had on him. So not only is he going through the physical symptoms, but then he has the kind of barrier of like, do I tell people that I'm going through this? Will they understand? Will there be judgment? Will there be stigma? And obviously we have same-sex couples, and the both partners might be going through it at the same time.
Absolutely. And
it affects so many more people than on the surface we might think. We might just put it in the category, like you said, of like women's problems, but then even that is like a much broader cross-section of people than we might assume in the beginning.
But that's a, I mean, that's a really important example in the sense of the transgender space, to say that actually if you are in that transgender space and you have a uterus, how that must be to navigate, that must be so challenging, in the sense of, at least as females, we're kind of prepared for it, in the sense of, you know, I can remember my mum having the conversation with my sister, who's a few years older than me, and she was telling her about menstruating and periods, and I sat there and was like, I'm not gonna bother with that,
Opt out, thank you.
Yeah, I'll give that one a miss. And my mum's like, okay, yeah, come back to me in a couple of years. And lo and behold, you know, 9 years old, boom, I was like, oh, okay, I don't get to opt out of this, you know. So from that perspective, when we talk about it's a woman's thing, at the very least, we're prepared for it. Mm-hmm. But in the transgender space, I wonder, and I have no knowledge of this whatsoever, but I wonder if that's part of the transition and process and the support that they get, you know. I mean, that
I would hope, because I think
this, I would too, but
this guy was really interesting and very open about it, and I was kind of flabbergasted when I read the post, and I read it 2 or 3 times. I was like, I don't think I've ever considered this before.
And no. He's
eloquent, and I've connected with him, so I'm really looking forward to more of his content, because I thought it was such an important conversation to even open up and publicly.
Definitely.
Well, I thought, God, there must be so many people that deal with this privately and struggle with this privately, because, you know, we know the trans community is horribly judged, and they have a horrible experience with a lot of things in society, and this is just kind of one part of that. But it's an interesting point about the impact it has. It impacts everyone, whether or not we experience it firsthand.
Yep.
We'll all know someone in our lives who is going through this, and we might be ill-equipped for it. And especially when it comes to like our leaders and stuff as well, because a lot of the time the managers that we might be working with, or the leaders that we are working with, might be older, and so they're more likely to kind of fall in the catchment group for perimenopause. So yep. Speaking yourself as a leader, and you know, you're very much involved in people in every aspect of what you do at work, so how do you think it impacts other people around you potentially?
So as in how they experience me?
How they experience you, yeah. Like, what kind of problems do you cause for others?
I mean, definitely, I think they recognise when I'm struggling. Mm. So the mood swings, you know, I haven't mentioned those yet. They're amazing. You know, one moment I think I can, like, run the world. Sometimes I think that anyway, but couldn't do a worse job, right? But and other days, you know, I just want to actually kill someone. So and that anger and frustration can come out of nowhere, and sometimes it boils over into frustration about something that's happened at work, you know, or something that, you know, a project that potentially is overrun or hasn't come to power, and I will just go. And then my team will be, I'll get that. I've kind of got, you know, really good, and I'm very fortunate. I've got good relationships with my team, and they'll kind of all go, ooh. And then it'll be, and then I catch myself and go, okay, this is not what this is. This is something else. But yeah, the frustration, the impatience, the just wanting to get shit done. And as I say, that impatience of like, oh, for God's sake, can we just not, you know? And it's like, know where that one came from. Sorry, my bad, you know. And it's, you know, holding myself to account around trying to manage those like varying degrees of emotions around people when I know that it's that. But still, even after 40 years, it can sometimes creep up on me and I blow up and then I go, what was that about? Oh yeah, okay, me, you know. And again, I think it's important to own that and to apologize where appropriate. And I think otherwise how people experience me is, as I say, I'm a bit of an open book, and I know sometimes that I can be too much. So
such thing as too much.
But it's just about kind of, you know, turning the dial and kind of recognizing that I'm in a frustrated space. So am I reacting because of the situation, or am I reacting because of my hormones and the point that I'm at in my cycle? And sometimes it's a both and, right? Sometimes it's a perfect storm of someone's been a complete muppet and I'm at that point in my cycle where it's just like, okay, tornado, you know. So I'm human, you know, at the end. And more and more as I kind of lean into this stuff, it's about being human, and it's about accepting that we are all of these, you know, wonderful piles of stuff that are all mixed up in molecules and mess, and that's what makes us who we are, you know. But yeah, there are times when I will go and then I'll go, oh yeah, my bad.
So this is really interesting, because it sounds like, as a result probably of your openness and your willingness to discuss it with people, it almost sounds like it could be a positive thing in your particular circumstance. And I don't mean as an experience to have to go through, because it sounds bloody awful, I'll be honest. But I just mean in terms of the relationships that you have with people and the way that they kind of take you and communicate with you, it sounds like you're kind of embracing the messiness and the humanness of it all. So do you think that's had a positive impact on the people around you and the way that you kind of adapt to the ways you work and communicate with each other?
Yeah, definitely the people I work closest with, definitely, and my close friends, etc. However, you know, potentially more senior people, or the people you don't interact with on a more regular basis, and that kind of thing, you know, I will, you know, I can be sat in a meeting and I'll feel my legs start to go because I'm getting really, really frustrated. And I'd be like, okay, this is maybe potentially not as safe.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the most respectful way, not that, like, you know, all of the leaders that I interact with are all, you know, whatever, but it's a case of, is this appropriate right now? Mm. And I don't always get that right. And I think, again, that's about just being aware of that for yourself and kind of checking yourself and going, okay, is this appropriate? Is what I'm feeling actually appropriate to this situation? Or is it, again, because of where I am and where I am in my cycle or whatever? And it's being able to kind of have those conscious thoughts. Mm. And again, sometimes you're partway through the blow and then you go, oh, hang on a minute, why am I going? And then sometimes I don't get the opportunity to catch myself, and those are the ones where I then beat myself up and kind of go, you've been doing this for 40 years, you know, every once a month this comes around, why does it come as a surprise, you know? And so, yeah, it's definitely a roller coaster in the sense of, sometimes it's really easy to manage because you go, oh yeah, I know why I'm feeling like this, and then other times you're like, why am I feeling like this? And then you go, oh yeah.
Do you know what's super interesting as you're talking there? The thing that strikes me is the amount of effort that you put into self-awareness, self-regulation, and all this management. And I'm just thinking in my head about, if this, again, I'm making the comparison between like cis men and cis women. I've known so many cis men in my life who are senior managers. They get frustrated at the tiniest little thing and they will just explode. But they're allowed to explode. They're permitted to explode. They're permitted to be angry. They'll storm out of a meeting and people will be like, oh, do you know what? He's absolutely right. This is not on. And people will respond really positively to that kind of emotional dysregulation. And actually, in some cases, it's been downright abusive the way that they've spoken to people, but it's been allowed and almost like held up as like, this is how we should behave and work. Whereas women, like, the amount of effort you've gone through to like contain yourself almost and be like, is this appropriate? Should I do this? Should I say this?
The mental energy.
Why?
Yeah. But also it's that's triggered a really interesting thought for me actually, because yes, the mental energy that it takes is huge, which is why, you know, sometimes you just need to sit and do nothing and stare at the wall, you know, kind of thing. But what that's triggered a really interesting thought in a conversation I was having the other day around authenticity. And how, you know, how we show up as authentic leaders and our behavior and how we role model and all of that kind of thing. And there was a comment made around, you know, this person yelled at me, but she was being authentic.
Mm.
And I was like, being authentic is not an excuse for bad behavior.
Mm.
And again, it's really interesting how some of the things and the models that we now and the phrases we, you know, authentic leadership and that is sometimes the banners put on it to then excuse other behavior. Mm. And as you say, you know, if a woman blows up, oh well, you're being very over emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if a man blows up, oh, isn't he strong? Isn't he, you know, he knows exactly what he wants and he's just telling you in his own way. And again, I am being hugely generalistic here. It's like, it's not every single male or female, yeah, whatever. But generally, if a woman responds, she's being emotional. Mm-hmm. If a man responds, he's being authoritative.
Yeah, it's so true. And I like the point that you made about authenticity is not an excuse for poor behavior, because it's similar to, like I make a lot of comparisons between the workplace and relationships, and I think in a relationship it's always good to be honest with your partner. So if you're upset, you should be able to say, I'm upset with you because of this, da 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 da. And like, the healthiest relationships are very honest, but there's also an element of self-editing and kind of an intention behind the way that they communicate. So rather than like screaming and effing and blinding at each other, it's better to kind of have some different coping mechanisms, like go away, reflect, come back together, have a more reasoned discussion and stuff. And I feel like those skills need to be practiced and brought into the workplace. So I feel like there's a comfortable middle ground between what we're talking about of cis women very in the menopause, very heavily editing themselves to make themselves acceptable versus, I don't know, maybe we just need more education in the workplace so that people can meet you where you're at a little bit, so that rather than you putting in a phenomenal amount of effort to overcompensate for what's going on very naturally in your body, maybe workplaces could become more inclusive and more accepting of some of the kind of hard edges that are there, so that you don't always have to do that. Because like you said, the mental energy it must take to edit yourself that much must be exhausting.
Yeah, and again, that's just triggered another thought for me around kind of integrity and respect and things, but in the sense of, you know, what we can do as women experiencing it, I'm not going to say going through it, experiencing it, you know, is talk about it more. You know, as I say, I'm having brain fog today, people, so forgive me if I ask you to repeat things 5 times or I have to write it down, mm-hmm. or I just stop in the middle. And I'm quite open about that.
Yeah.
What potentially I'm maybe not as open around is the anxiety part. You know, as a senior leader, I can't be seen as weak, right? And that's where the imposter stuff starts to come in, and, you know, kind of like the failure track. And it's hard because there is a balance, you know, and psychological safety is becoming much, much more of a topic of conversation in businesses and organizations. However, and I definitely haven't got the balance right, okay? I am not the expert here, but I know I can overshare, and I know that I also keep stuff in. So it's finding that balance, and that's a work in progress. You know, that's a life work for me, finding that balance. However, it's interesting how, when I was thinking about what we're going to talk about today, and I was like, well, yeah, because I'm quite happy to share that I'm having brain fog, or, you know, I'm having a hot flush or whatever, because that's like, you can almost see those things. I mean, you can see when I'm having a hot flush. It's, you know, I can't hide it. And, you know, the brain fog, if I stop talking in the middle of a sentence, you're going to go, are you okay? You know, so that they're noticeable things, but what's going on inside here, you can't see that. And no one can control it apart from me. So in the sense of, then do I share that anxiety? And do I share that kind of, oh, well, I'm just feeling really like shit today. I don't feel like I can do anything. Or I just want to like curl up on the sofa and do nothing. Does everyone feel comfortable to do it? I don't think they do. And, you know, I'm really fortunate. I've got a really great line manager. So, and I have started to share some of those things. And it's also based on your other life experiences stuff, you know, like your history and all of that blah. But in the sense of what we do share and what we don't share, is still that space where that psychological safety piece comes into play. And also then in terms of oversharing. And as I say, I don't get this right every time. So, you know, it's just really interesting to kind of reflect on it and think, okay, if I had, you know, what would I do differently? You know, how could I approach that? How could I position it in a way that's not gonna scare the bejesus out of somebody?
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because you're touching on something which is getting a lot more prevalent in workplaces now, which is the conversation around mental health. And This is a struggle a lot of people will have, is that they feel a lot more comfortable and a lot more almost like valid making an employer or their team aware of the fact that I'm going through something physical. This is a physical ailment I'm experiencing. It almost feels valid. Whereas I'm feeling anxious today, or I'm feeling depressed today, or I'm experiencing suicide ideation. Those are still really difficult conversations for us to have because, as you said, it's invisible. And it's the same for people with invisible disabilities as well, because it's almost like, well, prove it. And it's such a challenging conversation. So did you say you're trying to do this more, or is it something you're kind of teetering on the edge of, like, ooh, do I dip my toe?
I'm definitely trying to do it more. And as a mental health advocate, you know, I talk a lot about a mental health. And again, it was really interesting because I posted on one of my socials, this was I think probably a few months back, how I wasn't having a great day. I wasn't feeling my best. Overwhelmingly, the messages of support were amazing. And it just kind of reminded me that social media can be there for good. Mm-hmm. But then there were a few comments like, you shouldn't put this on social media. This is not topic matter for social media. And I'm like, actually, I think that's more of a reflection of where you are, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, your opinion of me. I'm sorry, I've just realized what my top says I'm wearing today.
Oh, so how fitting. Perfectly imperfect.
Perfectly imperfect.
I love it.
So, and that was completely off the wall. I literally just noticed it and the camera was like, oh yeah. but in terms of, yes, it's something I do strive to talk about more, because I think the more we surface things like this, the more we educate each other and ourselves. So the more I talk about, even just, you know, talking about it today with you, I'm sitting here thinking, that's interesting. So next time that happens, maybe I'll be able to catch it and recognize it for what it is, rather than making it into something that it's not.
Yeah.
Because our brains are amazing things, right? They can look at a leaf on the ground and think it's a rat, you know? So if that's what my brain can do with something visual, internally, it can do, you know, amazing, horrible, wonderful things. So I think the more we can verbalize that and share, then the more people can kind of go, oh yeah, it's not just me. Oh wow, I think like that, or that's similar to the thought I have. I mean, no one, you know, we're never going to think exactly the same as everybody else, because we are who we are, right? But in the sense of, if someone can go, oh that resonates, oh yeah, I've had something similar, or oh, that's a feeling that I recognize, then that's only going to make us better humans. And I don't want to sound all like kind of la about it, but that's how I feel about it. The more you surface things, the more you talk about them, the less scary they are. You know, mm-hmm. I can remember one of our first conversations, however long ago it was, but and you were talking about suicide ideation. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I'd never experienced. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was kind of, and I was interested, and I wanted to understand, and I was also like, whoa, because I hadn't been exposed to it. But now I talk about suicide ideation openly, and I've had conversations with people, mental health conversations, mm. with people who are having suicide ideation. So that only proves my point. The more we surface things, the more normalized these things become. And if we talk about perimenopause, menopause, endopause, and all the other pauses that go with it, then we're normalizing it. And, you know, if I get grief about talking about it with you on this podcast, then that's coming from a place of fear, as far as I'm concerned. That's coming from, if someone says to me, oh my God, what are you talking about that for? It's like, well, what are you afraid of? You know, in the sense, in the nicest possible way, what is it that's driving that anger, that kind of disgust, or whatever it is? Because, you know, let's like be honest, it's disgusting. Yeah, it's like the actual, you know, if we really break it down, whatever you believe, whatever your belief system, who thought it was a good idea to make women bleed for like however bloody long, every single month, for the rest, like for most of their life? 40 years for me, you know. So it's like, who thought that was a good idea? and that's what I mean. If we can make, and not make light of it, but if we can surface it and talk about it in a way that's easily discussed, like we're doing now, surely that's got to be a good thing, right? Surely that's got to be reaching someone who's kind of maybe sitting there going, I don't know why I'm feeling like this, or, you know, they're suffering horrendously heavy periods, or whatever it is. And if it prompts someone to go, I need to go and talk to someone about this, great, job done.
And I think that's such a key point as well. I actually think there is a lot of space to make light of it in two different ways. One is obviously to take a lighthearted approach, because I think humor can help us deal with the most horrendous parts of human existence. Absolutely. And kind of ride that wave, like you said, with a bit more capability and make the ride a bit smoother. But also just in terms of light and dark, I love the phrase like shedding light on difficult subjects. And it's one of the reasons I called it dark coffee, because it's like traditionally a very dark topic, suicide ideation and discussions around suicidality. And I love the image of like shedding light on something, because in the dark, like you said, our brain can interpret things in all sorts of horrible ways. And in the dark, everything can seem scary. But as soon as you turn a light on and you see something for what it actually is, like the more you know about a topic, often the less scary it becomes, because knowledge really is power in a lot of instances, isn't it? And even for me, I know every conversation I've had with a woman around perimenopause, it's helped to reduce the fear a little bit more, because it went from not knowing what I didn't know, and that was like blissful ignorance, to, oh my God, this sounds horrible, and not knowing very much, to being, you know, terror stricken, to, okay, now I'm learning more. I feel more empowered. I feel more prepared. I feel more, yeah, just kind of ready. I don't want to do it, but I know I have to. So it's like, okay.
Choice. Yeah. And this is the thing, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's you don't have any choice. And again, you know, my I have no what's the word I'm looking for? Brain fog in action. Right?
Tell me about brain fog, Michelle.
No, here's what brain fog is. I have no sense of when I'm going to enter menopause, because the women in my family were surgically entered menopause. They had hysterectomies, etc. So I have no sense of when my menopause is likely to start. It could be this year. So menopause generally is when you have no period for 12 months or more. So all the time you're having periods, you're still in perimenopause, mm-hmm. Or pre-perimenopause. Apparently that's a thing now too. Yeah. But in the sense of menopause is when you have no periods for a minimum of 12 months. So please, anytime you're ready. But so I don't know when that's going to start for me, because I say the females in my family were all surgically, they all surgically went into menopause. And that made me think about younger women, so women in their early 30s, late 20s, who have surgical interventions for to save their lives, like hysterectomies, for example, and they will go into menopause because that's what happens. And you know, I can't imagine being 20 years younger than I am and going into perimenopause or menopause. But it's happening, mm-hmm. and it's not just a mid-40s, late-40s thing. It's a late-20s, early-30s, mid-30s thing, and it's becoming more and more prevalent. And again, the more we raise the volume on this, the more people will think, oh, okay, well, you know, you're not some kind of medical whatever, because you're going into menopause or perimenopause in your 30s. Mm. It just depends on your personal circumstances.
And I like what you said about opting out and, you know, not being able to opt out, because even if you yourself do not have a uterus, you can't opt out of being in the world with people who do. So even if it doesn't affect you personally, you will be in a workplace where it affects someone you know, you will be affected by it. So what do you think are some of the things that we can do collectively, not just as individuals, because I think you spoke quite a lot to the kind of self-management process, but collectively as people who are supporting other people going through perimenopause, what can we be doing together? And I don't know if this is something that you've considered in your workplace before, because I think you're a very self-sufficient, independent person. So I could see you being like, this is my problem, I'm going to deal with it, I'm going to crack on. Have you done
anything? There are tools, right? So there are guides that, you know, your occupational health team, if you have one in your workplace, you know, as I say, the guides and kind of just education, you know, educate yourself. I mean, I spend inordinate amount of times diving down rabbit holes of websites and reading about things and, you know, then drawing kind of the key points out and then talking to people about them. So, you know, talk about it, you know, talk about your experiences. Me doing this with you today, it's like, you know, talking about the fact that it is perfectly normal to be experiencing this, however abnormal you feel at various times, right? So for me, it's about that kind of educate, communicate, you know, share. And the more we can do that, as we've said before, the more normal it will become. And from a workplace perspective, I say Oc Health are amazing, you know, the guides and things and the support mechanisms they can point you to, employee assistance programs, you know, those talking therapies, all of those kind of things will help with navigating your way through it. And as I say, I think for me personally, I've, you know, I've been in the world of work for more years than I care to remember now, and things have definitely changed, you know, and things have are definitely, it's the same as the mental health topic, right? It's Mental Health Awareness Week, I think, this week.
Yes. Although at the time of recording, yes.
I think every week is Mental Health Awareness Week. It does make me laugh, right? You know, every week is Cancer Awareness Week, and that's how it should be, because the more we talk about these things, the more normalized it will become, and the more that people share their experiences, the more human we become. Mm-hmm. Because what I think, and again, personal opinion, you know, the world we live in today is a freaking scary place. And the more we can share that makes us human, and the more that we can share that we are all going through these lived experiences in our own way, that's got to help somewhere, right? It can't be... we can't end up this race of individuals that live in their own heads and don't share experiences, good or bad, because mm-hmm. that's all part of being human. You know, it's that's your life experience right there.
And that's such a beautiful place to end this on. Thank you so much. A couple more quick questions to round us off.
I love the way you go, I'm going to end it, but I'm going to ask you something else.
I'm letting you know we're approaching the end. This is the finale. So we're all... thank you so much for today. Thank you for your openness. Like we've said, you're not a professional on perimenopause, but you've got a lot of people in your network that you speak to, and you yourself are very comfortable talking about it. So if someone has listened today and they'd just love to have a conversation with you about your experiences and just kind of hash it out with you, where can people find you and talk to you a little bit more?
So the best place right now is LinkedIn. I'm, you know, fully contactable through LinkedIn. I'm currently kind of working on a bit of an update and a rebrand of Rising Tides. So watch this space in terms of that. But yeah, LinkedIn's probably the best place right now.
Fabulous. And I'd really like to say, based on what you said before about communication being really important, I do just want to say to people, really encourage you to share this episode if you found it beneficial. Maybe your team could find it beneficial if they haven't experienced perimenopause, or even if there's someone who's going through it who you think, actually, this will make them feel less alone. This is a real, really, really important conversation to share, I think.
Absolutely. And you know, for women out there, or any individual out there who is going through this process, talk about it. Talk about how you feel. Share how you are experiencing what you're experiencing. And I think you'll be surprised at how much of a positive response you'll get and how much it resonates with so many people. So turn up that volume dial and just talk about it.
In the correct, psychologically safe settings.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for today, Michelle. Are there any other closing points you'd like to make? Anything you'd like to double underline from the conversation, or anything that you think hasn't been said that you just want to communicate?
I don't think so. I mean, I want to thank you for raising the kind of thought of doing this. As you know, you've mentioned quite a bit, you know, we talk about this a lot, and you've experienced me experiencing it. I was going to say going through it, but I'm not going through it, I'm experiencing it. I think the thing I'd underline is just talk about it, you know, raise the volume and share with people. You'll be surprised at how many people it will resonate with.
Thanks for listening today, you legend. What was your biggest takeaway from the conversation? Come and let me know over on Instagram by tagging me darkcoffeewellbeing. If you liked what you heard today, then please consider leaving a review so I can reach more people with my downright wisdom bombs. They'll thank you for it, and I will too. Thank you for your ongoing support. Keep on being a badass, and I'll catch you next time.